You're listening to the FQXI podcast.
That brings me on to our next guest. Taking physics in new directions will certainly appeal to Jeffrey West at the Santa Fe Institute. West has built a career as a particle physicist, but over the past decade or so, he has turned the mathematics he learned onto complex systems. He and his colleagues have been looking for underlying equations that apply to the growth, life, and deaths of animals, and also of cities. He spoke to me about how his work in biology and socioeconomics has given him a new sense of what time is, and what it tells us about how much time we have left.
The work started out actually in biology, and one of the remarkable things that one finds in biology is that despite this extraordinary complexity and diversity, almost any quantity you look at, any physiological quantity or life history event, scales with size in a very systematic way. Scaling just means how does it change as you change the size of the organism. And one of the crucial pieces of that is the role of time. And one of the things that we have discovered as we formulated a theoretical conceptual framework for understanding the origin of these systematic scaling laws was that there is kind of an emergent time that is different than the time that we read on our clock. But there is a biological time which emerges, which is quite interesting because what it says is that there is a systematic relationship between the pace of life and the size of the organism. So an example is that heart rate, which is again a beating phenomenon, it is a certain measure of time, changes systematically among mammals as you go from, say, the smallest mammal to the largest mammal. We all recognize that small mammals' hearts beat very, very fast, you know, up to 1,000 times a minute, all the way to a whale, which beats at an extraordinarily slow rate, and we're somewhere in between, so that you can define a kind of universal time for, say, all mammals. And one of the ways you can see that is this kind of amusing relationship that the way in which heart rate, for example, decreases with size, the slowing of the pace of life, is in some sense compensated for by the fact that big things live systematically longer. And they do it in such a way that roughly, very roughly, the shrew, which weighs, two or three grams, a few grams, has the same number, roughly the same number of heartbeats in its lifetime as does a whale, which is 100 million times more massive. And that number is about 1.5 billion heartbeats. Now, there's nothing fundamental about heartbeats, but what is fundamental and which transcends beyond mammals is the number of times the reaction takes place deep inside the cell, producing something called ATP, which is the chemical which is actually responsible for your energy. And it is those constraints that lead to the scaling laws and which lead to this emergent kind of time.
You haven't just been looking at animals. You've also been looking at cities and companies. Can you talk a bit about that and what that sort of tells us about time and perhaps even, you know, how much time we have left?
Yes, this is a very interesting problem. And it was very natural to ask similar questions about social organizations. Is a city just a great big animal? So just as we saw in biology that in some sense an elephant is a scaled-up mouse, so we discovered that New York is a scaled-up San Francisco, which is a scaled-up Santa Fe, which is where I live. And we did that by looking across the many measurable characteristics of cities, everything from wages to number of patents that are produced in the city, to the number of AIDS cases, the amount of crime, the length of all the roads, and so on. Everything you could measure, we looked at as a function of city size and found a systematic relationship. Now, in biology, the scaling that was manifested had the following property, that it did scale, but it scaled in such a way that it manifested something that's called economies of scale, meaning the following: that not only does life slow down as you get bigger, but you get a greater economy of scale, meaning the amount of energy needed to support the same number of cells gets smaller and smaller as you get bigger. So it's more efficient to be bigger in biology. Now, when we switch over to cities, we discovered something new, which is different from biology, and that is instead of having economies of scale in socioeconomic quantities like wages and AIDS cases and patents and so on, we discovered there was something that we called a superlinear relationship, which is that instead of getting less per capita the bigger you are, you get more per capita. So the bigger the city, the higher wages, the more number of AIDS cases, the more patents are produced, all to the same degree. One of the consequences of that is that that gives rise to the speeding up of the pace of life, the bigger you are, rather than the slowing down. So the bigger the city, the faster everything goes, even to the extent that the speed of walking remarkably increases with the size of a city in a pretty much systematic way. But then you ask about growth. For cities, you have open-ended growth. Now, that's good at first sight, but it has a huge pitfall. And that pitfall is that the equations have something that technically we call a finite time singularity. Now, what that means in sort of ordinary English is that if you keep going, you eventually, of course, run up against the potential of running out of resources, but you hit a point where the system is going to collapse. So you ask yourself, how are you going to get out of this? How did we get out of this? Why haven't we done it? And the answer is, and it's well known, I think, to everybody, that the way you do it is you have to make major innovations. You have to kind of change the paradigm, reset the clock, and start over again. So you discover coal, and that kind of has a total paradigm-shifting effect on the whole of culture, the whole of society, and it's as if you've started the clock over again. The catch is, so that's great, but the catch is that the theory says, yes, you can do this, but the price you pay is that you have to make innovations faster and faster and faster, so that it is as if, not only is the pace of life increasing, so that you're on this kind of accelerating treadmill that's getting faster and faster, but every once in a while you have to jump onto another treadmill which is going even faster, and then faster and faster you have to jump onto different treadmills. Well, that is, you know, eventually you, the system, is going to have a heart attack.
We're on this treadmill. When do we have to jump?
Well, let's say, you mean jump off?
Yes.
The time between the computer revolution and the IT revolution was maybe 20, 25 years. You know, so had, you know, the idea is if the analog to that 10,000 years ago may have taken hundreds or maybe 1,000 years. So that's getting shorter and shorter, and that is not sustainable, because eventually, obviously, if you take it reductio ad absurdum, you're going to have to make, you know, the analog to an IT revolution every 2 years, and this is crazy, you can't do that. So, in fact, my feeling, if you use the word jump, when should we be addressing this question? That the question should be minus 50 years. That is, we should have maybe been thinking about some of these issues 50 years or so ago. There's a kind of interesting issue that we're in this, what I think of as an expanding socioeconomic universe. And, you know, is there an end of time, so to speak, of socioeconomic time, meaning that the kind of quality and standard of living to which we've grown accustomed, and how can we smoothly transform into a stable situation, and is that conceivable? That is, and so one of the obvious questions is, can we have wealth creation, innovation, and the kind of exciting quality and standard of life that many of us in developed countries experience without this growth pressure? Or are they so intertwined that the system is destined to some kind of collapse?
Thank you to Jeffrey West there, who is telling Zia about how we are all doomed.
Yes, quite. If you would like to watch a video of a talk by Jeffrey West, and it's worth it to see the graphs that show the similarities and differences between the relationships for animals and for cities, then visit the website www.fqxi.org/community/podcast. But a word of warning, the language in that video may not be suitable for our younger listeners.